right, everybody. Welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit Podcast. We've got some great guests in the studio today, a long time in the making, and it's exciting that you guys are here. Dr. Martine, we've got Ryan Roberts in the studio as well. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, super pumped. We like to kick things off with what we call our Patreon question of the day, and we'll keep it pretty light today, but what was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
What a great question.
Favorite thing to do?
Yeah, whatever.
No, more specific. What age?
That's it. That's all they give us.
I would say like nine. Nine is the perfect kid age. Like when you think back.
Yeah, I don't know. Like when, you know, we're going to get into the medicine, but coming out of the medicine and being able to sit down around my kids, and I have a three-year-old daughter, just watching her imagination and her connection with everything and the lack of fear, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the journey we'll talk about today kind of puts people into that space where they can connect with being a kid again. So it's almost like the perfect question for this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think being at that age, you know, 3-4 years old, you know, before all that social stuff is packed on top of you, that conditioning, where you can just be free, like that's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah. What about you, Dr.
I would back that up, that just being in a fantasy world and just playing out like different scenarios and different roles for the future. I think that was my favorite thing.
My favorite thing, I lived in a neighborhood where all the houses were like right next to each other, and everybody had kids. Like the whole block was kids, and we would just play outside. We would make up games where we pretended to like pull a rope when a car was coming by and they would slam on their brakes, but there was no rope. we would do all kinds of, like two people on one side, two people on the other of the road, and we would
like
get
a mine.
Down. We would get down and then stand up and pull it, and the car would just slam on their brakes. We were like, ha ha.
No idea the danger, right?
Yeah.
No idea.
We did all kinds of things. So my favorite memories of kind of that age range were just playing with all the kids in the neighborhood. One of those was Kristen Glenn. She's a longtime TNQ, part of TNQ, helped build TNQ. And,
she's on our wedding.
She's one of my besties. So that is some of my favorite childhood memories, is just, being a kid, doing dumb things and having fun. I'll never forget it.
Saturday morning cartoons, man.
Mm.
And then going outside to play afterwards, and the day was beautiful after school, especially. Saturday morning cartoons. And that lined up, and then wanting to go outside and go on an adventure. I lived on that ranch, so it was this before internet and everything. We went outside, and the air always felt crisp. Right? It was like this energy that came with that. I know we don't grow up fast. We just get big fast.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up kind of takes a while. But it's a shame to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
When it stop, I mean, because you have to grow up, right? Apparently, but there is that, and it's well, yeah. Well, you joined the military. Yeah,
you joined the military. Right.
You
can extend.
Right.
You can extend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some of us grow up. The rest of us try to hold on to that childhood for as long as we possibly can. And I vividly remember that.
I liked the fact that we didn't have fear as like kids. You know, you would just do anything. Like,
that's it.
Your imagination was like at its, you know, most open and wild. I would love to just like explore anything. Like, I thought it was so cool to like crawfish in the ditch, you know, like catch crawfish. And I thought that with just one match and a pot of water, I was going to boil said crawfish. It was not a reality.
But yeah.
We would just do everything as kids, man. Just, you know, imagination, you know, was just wide open. The fact that I was an entrepreneur at a pretty young age, so like I like to like make business ideas, even at a pretty, you know, as a kid. I was selling candy out of our little swing set. We had like made like a little drive-through window, and I would buy candy from the grocery store and then try to sell it to the neighbor kids. So just, I don't know. Just
the hustler.
Living for the moment, yeah. You know?
Hustler. Yeah, hustler, man. Because remember, at that age, you look through, your lenses are different.
Totally.
It's like a bubbly kind of everything could is possible.
Everything's possible.
Everything's possible kind of thing.
And you kind of get to this point in your life, which kind of sucks, where you're like, oh, those things aren't for me, and that I can't do that. And then it's like, oh, wait a second. When we were kids, we could do whatever the heck we wanted to do.
Yeah.
This is a deep question.
As long as we weren't bothering our parents.
I thought it was going to be bubbly.
Good.
No, I think it was fun. All right.
Well, if you guys want to check out Patreon, it's patreon.com/teamneverquit. You guys can get exclusive access to the show. You can give us questions to ask our guests. You can get some bonus swag, some cool phone backgrounds, all that cool stuff. But we are excited to get to today's topic. I'm so glad you guys are in the studio. Happy Friday, everybody.
Yeah, happy,
happy
Friday.
Friday.
Good day.
It's a Friday's, great day.
Man, just, Fridays are just... I heard they're talking about making four-day weekends.
Yeah, yeah, I'm about it.
I have no doubt you are.
I'm about it.
Was there ever a time when we didn't work five?
Right. No, I do work all the time.
There would be no four-day weekend with you. You are always working.
Yeah, right. Find something to do on your day.
Yeah. That's right.
You would be starting another business.
I would be.
That's probably how it worked back in the day when we just came up with one or two.
That's right,
right.
Exactly.
Even on the days off, you were doing something.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm super excited about our guest today. I got to know Dr. Martin last year. It's been a little over a year. And he has healed not only my family, but so many of my friends and family members. And anyway, I'm very excited to have you on today. So thank you for
He's
coming.
He's our doc.
Yes.
This ought to be interesting.
Thank you for hosting this.
Yes. All right, doc, be gentle.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think all of this kind of started when we had the Capones on. Amber and Marcus Capone came on the podcast probably in like March or April of last year. And they shared their story. I think it was a two-parter.
Yeah.
It was a two-part podcast. They shared their story of being healed by this controversial psychedelic medicine. Not so much controversial, but unknown. You know, a lot of people just...
Which brings all that with it.
Yeah, right. They're scared of the word. We're all... I mean, I was scared of the word. So... but they shed light and...
Oh, if we're talking about it, you know it's broke through.
Yeah, I mean, they were... Well,
if it's sitting on my doorstep...
Right.
Yeah, they were vulnerable enough to share their story. And because of them, so many people have been healed since then. But that's how we met Dr. Martin. And we're very grateful for that. So there is... Dr. Martin, will you explain kind of the process of how veterans go down and get treatment and what it is?
Yeah. So it generally word of mouth referrals. So people meet their colleagues, teammates that have gone through the process before. They get connected to us. We make sure that they're good candidates from a medication standpoint, from a health standpoint. Then we pair them with a coach. And this process can take anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks of coaching and preparation. And then they come down to Mexico for a 4-day or 5-day retreat.
It's a lot cooler than you just said. I'm about to team guide up a little bit, all right? Because when we say you just can't go down there to do this.
Yeah,
correct.
I'm telling you, don't do that. When you saddle up with it, you know, it's kind of, but the gift comes from going through it and when you say it calls to you, it's because I there's some guys, you know, you won't even talk to them about it
because
you know that you can see it. I mean, there is a shift.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then when you say it calls to you, it's like, hey, man, you'll hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
You just hear about it in the wind. And then months will go by or a year or something like that.
Yeah.
For some guys. And then sure enough, man, someone close to you will mention or something. You'll hear something about it. And it just kind of keeps coming at you until you, man, before I knew it, I was on my way down there.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's kind of like you couldn't SF that even more if you tried it. It's so perfect. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, you got to be recommended for this thing. It's called down to you. You got to train for it, and that calls to it. It's cycle because that's how we're set up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's the program. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I mean, just from the time that sucker comes knocking on your door, mm-hmm. your life's going to change.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the medicine begins the minute you start hearing about it and you accept that into your life.
And team guys, the way we talk, I mean, everybody, we'll get into this whole line about how important it is to keep in touch and everything like that, man. But who you wind up down there with, I mean, because every guy will tell you something. There's generalities in what you hear.
Yeah.
That's our underground language. Like, he'll be talking about something, and there'll be one thing he says that I'll latch onto. And I'm like, Roger that. I understand exactly what he's talking about. All that other stuff is fluff or whatever. But there's a few things in them sentences that I pick up real quick.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, for me, the word psychedelic medicine scared me because the word psychedelic. And mm-hmm. to me, that means a drug, and drugs scare me. I have never done a drug in my life. I don't drink alcohol. I've never smoked. Like, it's not my thing. So it terrified me. And I knew a lot of people doing it. And I was like, oh, good. Great for them. But I would never do that. Mm-hmm. And I don't ever want my husband doing mm-hmm. that. But when I saw true change in people, mm-hmm. People that I knew well and that were legit crazy ass psycho kind of people.
Yeah, my buddies.
and they changed.
My closest buddies, right? Like, they die for you in a second kind of dudes, right? Yeah, they're a little off.
I loved them. I loved them as my... I mean,
she did, yeah. That's
they're like my brothers, but I loved them, but they were crazy as shit, yeah. Like very crazy, and I completely saw them change to where they were gentle giants now instead mm-hmm. of crazy giants, and not only gentle, but they were. It was like they lost all of this temper and anger and meanness and just like darkness. Mm-hmm. It just fell off, and that's when I was like, there's got to be something to this. I mean, I've known these guys for years, and I'm seeing these huge changes, and that's when I just started, like, diving deep in and asking a million questions, and, you know, I would call all these people, have you heard of this? Have you done it? What did you hear? You know, I wanted to know everything. Mm-hmm. And then when the Capones came, and I still never considered it for Marcus, mm-hmm. But I was just interested. And I actually started telling people, you should do it. You should do it. Like, your husband needs this.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm like, yo.
What happened?
Yeah.
Here we are.
And I still had not considered it for Marcus until the Capones came.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard their story, and it hit home so close to me. I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. And when I talked to Marcus about it, he's like, I'm fine. I don't need, you know, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, but there's definitely some healing that you can have. Like, I said, everybody needs healing. Like, I feel like I need healing, and I don't know what from, but I feel like I could use healing. And
I didn't register. You know how that, when they say it to us, you're like,
Yeah.
Well, and at first, Marcus was like, I don't need it. Everybody else needs it. And
imitation. Sounds just like that. Just like that.
That's right.
Right. Almost to the scoffer, but I don't scoff.
Nailed it.
The best way is, I can describe it, is when Banner got a hold of the Hulk.
Yeah.
Right? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, with our guys, there's a few of us, especially, man. And in all of our communities, there's some of them guys that got pushed. The Edgewalkers.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted them there. We hung them out there. You know, I was a medic, so I hung out there with him, man, and it just, whatever we picked up was, you know how we feel, like, it's like riding your wild, no one else could ride that sumbitch,
mm-hmm.
But they work together very well, just don't put anybody else in there next to him.
Yeah.
And it just kind of slammed and cinched that belt up, tightened the laces, whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it, that's kind of what happened. And she said the titles, the psychedelic medicine,
mm-hmm.
I grew up in that era, too. But I heard someone say one time it's 40 years of therapy in that weekend. So think of psychologists and psychiatrists medicine, right? It's because it's a mental thing. But it works. I mean, it's a cure, not just the...
That's right. It's not a bandage.
Yeah, right. Not a bandage. Thank you. Yeah.
And it's not a drug. And that's my biggest thing about advocating for this, is that you're not using it as a drug. You're not using it for pleasure
or to numb or disconnect. To numb
it's like a surgery. It's like going to the hospital for a freaking surgery. Not going in there to get some.
It's a psychic surgery.
Not going in there to get some freaking Vicodin.
Yeah.
Because you're bored or whatever.
And it's not something that you go and do by yourself either. Like you just get it off the street and try it. Like this is something that should be done through a program.
Absolutely.
And and Dr. Martini, you have like the best program because you've got the best people surrounding you in this. You've got the coaches, you've got the medic, the all of these different people that went before you go, they want to know your blood work, they want to know your vitals, they want to know if you're on any other medication. You know, they're actually they care about your well-being and that you do this in a way that it is a medical procedure. Absolutely. It's not just I'm going to get high or whatever, or I don't know what people.
It's that. Well, it's also like joining the military. I mean, or it's pulling you out of the matrix, or however we were talking about it. You know what I mean? It's just like Marcus said it pretty good. It's like, man, it resets that central nervous system. So imagine coming in brand new with all your knowledge, and you can retrain the sucker to do anything. That's why it's important. Like, hey, this is what y'all line it out pretty good.
Yeah, and the more work you do on the front end, the more you get out of it on the back end.
It's
like bolted in there. It's ingrained in there. We get you in your whole DNA, changes everything.
I mean, it's so transformational that you need some type of a framework to put it into afterwards.
Yeah.
Because you could come out on the other side worse, right? If you were in the wrong place.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
Right? With the wrong people. I mean, you could come out wrong on the other side, not healed.
There's a movie out here.
I did see somebody come out worse. And I have to say, sorry to interrupt, babe, but the one person that I saw that came out way worse than they were before is because they didn't really believe in it. They didn't do the prep work. They went down there, came back, and immediately started drinking, like that night. Ooh. And that person is, I mean, like, awful. And I think it did make them worse because I kind of explained to people, and I know there's no scientific proof of this, but it's like a car wash for your brain. And so you're, like, cleansing everything, and then you go and put all these toxins right back into it. It's just destroying you and destroying who you are.
Yeah. I mean, Doc can speak to us. Actually, it can be dangerous with the Ibogaine.
Yes.
Where you don't want to come out on the other side and then introduce that back into your body.
Yeah. Yes. And that person did it within 24 hours.
That was made perfectly clear to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think you bring up a really important point. I mean, so many people, you know, probably us included, come out of the medicine and we want to get on the biggest mountain and just yell out to everybody who's struggling and say, come on, like we can help. But, you know, we have to temper that. Right, because it'll get to the right person at the right time in their own process, on their own path, and you got to be willing and you got to be ready, right? Because it's more dangerous if
train
you're
them
not,
like that.
You
know? Our guys are specifically trained already for that.
Right,
we were kind of talking about that. I was like, hey, look, when you're out, man, you're just initiated.
Yeah,
you don't even know what you don't know.
That's right.
Right, and even in our communities, man, if you after one deployment, after one, you're just a one platoon wonder.
Yeah, no doubt.
You was just a two-pump chump.
Yeah.
Like, you never got up there where you were good enough for anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
Which makes you stay on the path. I mean, that for when you get up in the morning, what do I have to do? There's something I got to do before I go do that.
Right.
And once you get in, this is the cool part. It gives you your breaks, and because that's all in there as well. But if you back off of it and start doing some dumb stuff, it'll be like, hey, what? Are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's cool because then that your buddies will start showing up.
That's right.
It's like you can feel that disturbance in the force.
That's the truth.
The reason I keep referencing that so people understand what kind of a general idea what I'm talking
That's
about.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to preface and say all of that on like how we got introduced. Mm-hmm. But how did you get introduced to this?
So I got introduced pretty early as a teenager. My dad was a hippie, so he was involved with some peyote circles that were happening around Mexico, and he took me as a 14-year-old to just participate. So I got to see the reverence and the respect that my elders had for these experiences. There was a lot of ritual and ceremony. That made me more open to then read about psychedelics and be just fascinated by drugs in general and medicines. And then at 21, I had an experience with mushrooms, which was really transformative. It made me realize that it was wrong, or it was very dogmatic, to be an atheist, that I could not categorically say that God does not exist, because everything I saw was alive and was breathing and was infused with source energy. So that's how I got into psychedelics. And then I got into treating people with ibogaine, maybe trying to help a family member who was struggling with addiction. And we had tried everything as a family to help her, but nothing was taking hold, because she was in this mindset which is called addictive thinking, which is a very delusional, disordered mindset where people can justify their drug use and they think it's actually good for them, or, you know, it serves a purpose. Mm-hmm. So I took her to see an ibogaine provider, and the day after, I was able to walk with her on the beach, and it was such a profound experience for both of us to see how this had shifted her perspective. And with addiction, oftentimes it's just that shift in perspective which is needed for somebody to move away from the addiction. So she physically moved away from where she was using, and she got back into school. She started doing yoga, started eating healthy.
Well, a bird in a cage can still fly.
Mm-hmm.
By removing herself from, you know, the place that she lived and her environment and everything that kind of nurtured her addiction, did that help long term?
Yeah, that definitely helped. And it was also getting back into school, eating healthy, doing yoga. So it's really important with psychedelics to emphasize the integration of the experience and the daily practices. So if you want to maintain the benefits of an experience like this, you have to meditate, even if it's just 10 minutes a day, yeah. 20 minutes a day.
Why does that word scare people? First of all, I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was in SEAL teams, they had my ass underwater. That's all I did. And same with him. Yeah. But if you'd have told me to actually think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And say, hey, that's what that is. And when I got broken down for me, like, how do you clear your mind? It's impossible. You can't really do that, because the minute you try to shut it off, it all, well, that's what that is. It's clearing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said concentrate on every bubble of air that goes through your nose and try and make a relationship with it down and just count your breaths, because most people can't count 10 breaths.
Mm-hmm.
Something will come in their mind. They'll just whatever. So I focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll learn how to do 5. Like, baby step it.
Totally.
That was... And I had no idea what meditation was, but if you just take the time to breathe for your body, what do you think it's going to do while you're breathing for it? Because it does it by itself.
Right.
Yeah.
So I always looked at it like this, because mind, body, and spirit, those are three completely different things.
Yeah. Well, and there's different ways to meditate. You can do the breath work apps. You can do, like for me, it's the rosary. And that is a true meditation.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of different ways to meditate.
Reading a book.
Yeah.
You can be sitting with your kids. It's whatever gets you to close off all of that monkey mind.
Right. And allows you to focus. A lot of people think meditation is like some sort of weird whatever. Like
sitting on a mountaintop.
Yeah, they don't understand it. Yeah. But
so a better term is this actually like mindfulness. It's just being present and being aware. And and it's actually concentrating the mind, not trying to like make it blank. It's, it's focusing on just one thing.
Look at what you're at. Where, like, concentrating where you're at and looking at the beauty in that, as opposed to letting like yesterday or whatever else fly in there. It's like the moment grants you that peace, as long as you concentrate on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a difference between looking, seeing, and watching something.
Mm-hmm.
What are some mindfulness tips for the listeners? Because I think that's something we talk about a lot, but I think putting it into practice can sometimes
nobody ever
shows
what they are. It's like, hey, what do we need to do? Mindful. Well, what the hell does that mean?
I mean, for me, like if you do the rosary every single day, and anybody can do that, you don't have to be Catholic to do it, but it's certain prayers and they're timed out and there's a certain amount that you do. And when you're doing those, it actually, you are taking the breaths. There is a repetitive.
There's a cadence to
that. There's a cadence to it. And so, and it's, depending on how fast your words can go, it's about 40 minutes long. And it's the same thing. It's structure every single day.
That's key. Right. Yeah. I think that's key, because once you start building those habits, you're very aware. Right. So if you start to get in a stressful situation, you could say, I know how to check in.
Right.
Right. You could check into yourself, whether it's breathing, whatever that might be for you, you know, whether you're doing, you know, your grounding practices to kind of just check in and like, okay, I'm here right now. This is how I'm feeling. That's it. You know, it doesn't. If the idea of meditating or mindfulness gets you stressful, it gets you stressed out, like, it's already going in the wrong way.
Right.
Right? It's anything but that. So it's really
like
just about
checking in. Marcus does very deep breathing. And sometimes we'll just be on an airplane or whatever, and you can hear him taking his breaths. And I'm like, okay, he's doing his meditation. Mm-hmm. Like, he's counting his breaths. He's going through that.
That's what the body's for. Imagine your whole purpose is to train that breath, mm-hmm. your actual mm-hmm. breathing, the air you consume.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what you're training, because it switches for every environment you put yourself in. When you go for a run, think of how you're breathing. If you sit down and breathe that same way, that's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
So you're actually training, and I'll talk to my young guys. I'm like, hey, man, I'll do push-ups for a minute or so. I'll be breathing hard and out of just yelling and screaming. I was like, but if I put you in a bedroom with your girlfriend, you'll do push-ups for hours and won't even get tired.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So don't tell me I don't know what I'm talking. You know, that's how you do this. You switch it around, and those breathing exercises, now I would remember how I would breathe when I was in a certain situation. And you can switch that mm-hmm. at will.
You can.
And it'll happen if you train it enough. This is what happened to me. I didn't notice it, but what happened was my breath, I found myself doing the breath. I'm like, what environment am I in? Why am I breathing like that? So when I put those two things together, and this day and age, man, there's the information out there, and everybody's been practicing is so
it's a wonderful available. Time to be alive, where we have access to all this
these
different knowledge systems. And in fact, one of the things that we recommend for people to start their mindfulness practice is to download an app called Insight Timer, where you can listen to guided meditations. So you don't even have to know how
that
to
makes
meditate.
It easy.
You just put it on, you just listen to it for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and it just walks you through.
How about that?
Yeah. It's called Insight Timer.
Mm-hmm. That one's free. There's other ones that are.
And so Marcus listens to, what's the app, the Breathe. It's called Breathe. What's funny is it would tell him after he's done a certain amount, like, you now have the breath of an otter or of a whatever. Mm. And then one time he was like, babe, he showed me the phone. It goes, you have the breath hold of a Navy SEAL. And I was like, you made it.
Look at you. You graduated.
Yeah. Took long enough.
Yeah. You're not a two pump chump anymore.
Yeah.
So. But yeah,
I was pretty happy about it. I don't know how. It's little rewards.
Yeah,
that's it.
But there's a lot of apps for breath work. Here I am over here promoting the rosary. But there's an app called Hallow, and it's really amazing. It has all these different like Gregorian chants and different music, prayers or whatever that you can go through, and you can set like. If you want to pray for 15 minutes or for 30 minutes, you just set the timer and it'll just go and you go along with it. So there are a lot of different, all across the spectrum of different meditations that you can do.
There's this. The reason you do that and find a place where you breathe well and you're peaceful is because life's going to throw some stuff on you that's going to get you out of that. And if you have practiced enough to do that and go into that, you push right through it.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's nothing.
Yeah.
Because if you go out searching for the hard times, we talk about this, then that's good. That's what you're supposed to do. If you don't, life will just be like, and bring it right to you.
That's right.
Here you go. Here's a plate full of it. Here's some stuff somebody else didn't want either just because you're being freaking lazy. That kind of thing.
Yeah. And if you can't learn from it, it's going to keep bringing it.
What's
you
up? Know?
Your path is full of it.
Whenever you go in there, it taught me this too, is that there's a sign in there for a good, it's not a bad thing, a good thing, it's a thing.
That's right.
And when... as you pull that sign out of there and you're going down the rest of your life, if it shows back up, that means you're in a same scenario.
That's right.
And that's your like turn and shift kind of move. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
If you learn how to work all three of them together, it's pretty amazing.
Yep.
So with the medicine, I mean, obviously you found it because it helped your family member that had addiction. And that is one of the biggest things that I have seen it help people with is different addictions, whether it's... alcohol or a drug or whatever, knowing that there is something that can truly help cut an addiction, that needs to be told to the world. I mean, half of our issues in America is because of some sort of addiction. It might be a pain pill. It might be an upper.
Might be sugar.
It might be sugar. Right. It might be whatever. Whatever it is, like, to be able to break an addiction is huge. Mm-hmm. And there is a medicine, a one-timer, not something that you get addicted to.
Oh, dude, it kicks you out of there. You don't even want to. Like, I don't want to see you.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, ever again.
God. Yeah, a one-timer that can help
love you.
People.
Peace out, man.
Can you imagine if everyone that had an addiction could do this? I mean, and it's not just for addictions. It can help people that are grieving. And right now you're helping a lot of the widows in the military community. I have seen a lot of the widows that have gone through the program, and seeing the peace that they mm-hmm. have now, which I thought that they were at peace before, but seeing how they are afterwards is so heartwarming and amazing that they're finding healing through this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the program that you're doing for Gold Star families?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So we have funding for a study that is going to look at psychedelics for prolonged grief. And there's a new diagnostic category. It's called prolonged grief disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to demonstrate that there's psychedelic treatments for it. And we're going to do 15 women psilocybin, then another group of 15 women are going to do 5-MeO, and then we're also going to have a control group. So we'll be able to compare all three conditions. Mm-hmm. So we're actively recruiting for that study. We're looking for women that lost men to combat or to suicide.
Okay. I mean, that's awesome. And mm-hmm. I'm sure that you could find those people pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because
what's the end game? Is it to get that legal or as an approved treatment?
So these are small studies, so they're not going to convince the FDA, but it's going to help convince the government to make a case then fund bigger studies.
That's great news.
Yeah.
So is that something that you're doing through the University of Texas?
So yeah, UT is a research arm of the study, and then we're doing the treatments. So we're the site for the research. They do the brain scan, so they're going to come to UT, get their brain scanned, get biomarkers measured, get surveys, and then they would go down to Mexico or to Jamaica or wherever the retreat's happening.
Okay.
And then come back here and get another brain scan.
And the reason people have to leave the country is because of the legalization of it.
Correct. So these compounds were scheduled in the 1970s. They're considered to have no medical use, which is wrong. And high potential for abuse, which is also wrong because they're
the absurd statement I have ever heard in my entire life.
Well, and
has having gone through the program, having to go through all that past stuff to get to this point, that was the most absurd statement I've ever heard.
Is that because of the hippie movement in the 60s when everyone was just
the war on drugs,
taking mushrooms out of cow poop and popping it in a concert or something? Like,
yeah, it was threatening to the government because it was part of the anti-war movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also the drugs that were being used by the counterculture mm-hmm. and protesters. So Nixon made them illegal to be able to persecute them.
Man, if you're taking that stuff without being trained, I can understand.
But they weren't taking
Ibogaine. I can see that. I can understand that.
Right.
They weren't taking Ibogaine. They weren't taking 5-MeO.
No, 5-MeO is relatively new to the kind of psychedelic community. And Ibogaine was also relatively known. It doesn't have a lot of repeat customers.
Yeah.
No.
That is for sure.
Man, are you kidding me? That is for sure.
Nope. That's the last thing I want to do. Yeah.
There's only a handful of us that have to go through that, right?
That's right.
What's the process of trying to legalize that as a medicine that's done in a clinic or retreat type facility like you do in Mexico?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's different efforts. So there is an organization called MAPS that has been doing research with MDMA, and they're the closest to getting approval for that medicine through the FDA.
Okay.
And then psilocybin is probably coming next. For compounds like Ibogaine and 5-MeO, they're a little bit further behind because they haven't done enough research.
Man, I get that.
We don't have
that. Yeah, I get
that,
you know.
I know, but
that was the nuclear bomb effect.
But you know, it would be amazing if doctors could do it here.
Absolutely.
Or retreat centers.
It's
to
a
do
shame
it here.
That our veterans have to leave our country to go get treatment.
Yeah.
Like, that is just so absurd. But at the same time, you know, I think we can also understand, like, if you turn the clock back 30, 40 years,
sure.
I mean, they were fearful,
man,
right?
Terrible.
You know?
Had
so
to
it's
be.
Like,
well,
you
and imagine it's generational not, because I wasn't alive in that time, but it made me fearful. Like,
sure.
Just the word psychedelic, just because it's beat in our head that it's a bad thing, I was so apprehensive to Marcus or any close loved ones. Doing it because it scared me.
Right.
Because that's what we're conditioned to know. But then, like I said earlier, after seeing what it does, I'm like, wait a second, this isn't a abusive mm-hmm. kind of drug like cocaine or something. Like cocaine, you can, you know, take it, ruins your life eventually, whatever. I've never done cocaine, but seen it in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, it's not like that. It's not an enjoyable thing. This is like Marcus calls it, it's a true confession.
Yeah.
It's
I was afraid.
Yeah.
We should have a ticker for how many times we all say this is scary and not fun and unenjoyable.
Like, when I say I try, like, I was literally afraid. Yeah. I'm not afraid of anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
I mean, I even actually know, I have a knowing, right? And when that sucks, when I'm like...
But it's a cleansing.
It's a disrespect. I mean, it's like, I don't want to disrespect. It's like,
So how do
It's unbelievable, really. So that's how you know. I don't think people would.
But that's why the research is so important, right? For those people who just don't, they don't know, they don't understand. I mean, I was one of them. I never thought I'd be in the place, right? Like, I was a very analytical, objective person who's like, that's, I'm not doing that. Like, there's no way. But then you hear the stories, and not more than hearing the stories, you see it.
Mm-hmm. You that's how you get, that's the proof right there.
Just in the way that they live their life. Yeah. That was all needed.
I mean, we don't even talk about it. That's the downfall. I was like, man, normally when you come out, we wouldn't get quiet again.
Right.
We go back to our lives, but I mean, you're talking about a new operator in there, so it's like live by example. That's what we're doing.
That's it.
We ain't trying to push this on anybody.
Right.
Like we said in the beginning, it calls to you. I'm not telling anybody to go down there or do anything like that, man. All I'm saying is there's a difference.
People will just start asking.
We'll just ask,
like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? What happened?
For a long time, we were scared to say anything.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been a year and we're finally coming out with it. But for a long time, you know, people would ask.
People ask
me all the time, like, what is Marcus doing where he looks so good?
And I'm boring now, man. I don't drink. I'm too pathetic, man. I'm like, I don't know.
And my answer, which is true, it's not lying, is that he doesn't drink anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an underlying thing to that. Why doesn't he drink anymore? Right. And it's because of that medicine.
I drank it all.
Right.
You know, you're like, when no one likes a quitter, it's like, well, we drank it all. Don't worry about it. And then, you know, you just, it is. It's a cleanse. Man, I can't tell you. I have the best day of my life every day.
Mm-hmm.
I say that's it out loud.
That's it.
Like, I'll go around the corner and snicker when I'm like, when we're all doing something, like, dude, man, something will show up. I'm like, thank you.
And well, every day he's like, at the end of the day, he's like, did you have a good day? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, it was a great day.
You're just overflowing with gratitude all the time.
That's what it is. The best joy you will ever have is in gratitude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're trying, I was like, man, I don't know how to. I keep thanking you. I think you're getting pissed at me, but I'm just gonna say thanks even more. Like, then you get into the hugs. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, man, I don't want to. Guys don't do that. But I was like.
Well, and we used to think.
Just thanks, man.
Yeah.
That's right.
We used to think we had great days, but when you strip off a lot of the baggage, mm-hmm. which is what the medicine did for us, it just took a lot of walls down. And our marriage, I feel like, has gotten a gajillion times stronger.
They're pulling armor off.
Yeah.
Like,
and I feel
plane,
like
you know, it's just
we were strong. We were unbreakable before,
mm-hmm.
but now it's like we're just an unstoppable force. And
it's almost like we never come off, when we come off the line, you never take your uniform or your armor off.
Right.
Even up to the point. But what it was is almost like, remember before all this stuff started happening to us and you could separate the two? Like, hey, man, I'm having a great day. It's like my armor's sitting right over there. I can throw it on anytime I want.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's right there. I can throw it anytime I want. Yeah. And you know that. That's another scary part. When people are like, well, you guys don't want to fight anymore. I'm like, well, that's because you know, I know what I can do to you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, not only that, there's some, all of us out here, you can't imagine what we are. So it's with like pieces where you're supposed to be, like the happiness, gratitude, joy. And I get that.
That's the natural state.
Natural state. That's the best way to say that. It's like, you'll know when you're in your natural state, man, because everything flows like it's supposed to.
Flow state. Yeah.
Are there politicians that are actively trying to legalize this as a medicine? Underline and highlight, bold print that word, as a medicine, not as a drug. Do you know of any that are actively trying?
There's several examples. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Texas, Governor Perry,
mm-hmm.
Representative Dominguez. And then in Pennsylvania, there's an effort to establish a pilot program to mm-hmm. treat 200 veterans. There was some legislation passed in Connecticut. So there's different legislative efforts, and veterans are leading the way.
Well, that's how you know it worked.
That's it.
They send us in first.
That's
we volunteer for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Correct.
And if it pulls us out of that and they see that, mm-hmm. I mean, we're designed to take pain. We're mm-hmm. the one that collects the scars and that, you know, all that stuff we like. That's it. So if they're sending us in to do something like we are, and it turns back around and you see the effect on it, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did they make it? All right, now we're
all right, good. I got it.
Well, send I mean, those guys. Yeah. And a big part of that is not only are the guys going through, but the wives are going through, and the widows. I mean, there's a whole nother part to it. Yeah, like guinea pig the veterans, it's fine. Like, let them.
We used to it.
We love you, America.
Guinea pig them, but the women are always untouched with being a guinea pig of something. So for the fact that I did it. So the fact that we are doing it is a huge indication that this is actually working. Because we can all say, oh, yeah, it helped our husband. But when we say, oh, my gosh, it changed, like, it changed my life.
Yeah.
And it not only did change his life, it changed mine. And then we can work as a team together. Yeah. Where a lot of
now, what she says to it, like, makes complete sense. You know, there used to be the Venus and Mars thing. Yeah. Like, when they start talking to you in manly and they understand it, you're like, wait a minute. How do you know? They're onto us.
What do they know? What do they know?
Oh, damn. Damn it. They're in the manual. Bead window. Bead
window. So anyway, I think that really speaks to it, is that it's not just something that we're guinea pigging them into. It's something that is legit changing anybody's life, like your family member that was just in an addiction. She wasn't a veteran. She wasn't, you know, it's not like that. She was just someone struggling with addiction. And that is the kind of key person that this can help. Or someone like me that had zero addictions, but just needed, and I didn't even know what kind of healing I needed. I just knew that it could help me. I trusted it because I saw the change in my husband and family and friends. And it did. It completely changed my, and to be honest, it brought me closer to my faith, which was never in jeopardy, but I'm on a whole nother level now. And I love that. Like, it made me so, so happy. And not only me, but like, I roped my whole family into not only just our faith foundation, but like having discipline about it, which discipline is something I've never had. He's great at discipline. I am not. I'm kind of a chaotic mess in a bubbly cloud.
Write that down.
Like, I'm just kind of like jumbled.
Play that back.
Yeah. But I am now, that is one area of my life that I am disciplined in. And it brings me so much inner peace and joy.
Well,
so,
I mean, we've been intentional about that as well, right? I think as veterans were getting treated, there were kind of some spouses that would trickle in. But now we have a dedicated program for our spouses and for adult children. And it's, you know, very similar to the way that the guys go through, the gals go through in the veteran program, but we have a families program that it doesn't go all the way top shelf with the Ibogaine. We spare them.
I get that. Yeah. Oh yeah.
But it does a psilocybin and 5-MeO, you know, combination, which is, you know, changing lives, right? Yeah. 'Cause we feel like if we can heal the veteran, then we can heal the home. That just cascades and we'll heal the community. Right. Mm-hmm. And that will just grow and grow and grow. I mean, I feel like this is a tidal wave. Yeah. Right, and it's coming.
I think
it's
coming. A big thing to talk about is that, because we talked a lot about dudes doing the Ibogaine. Why do the females do less of Ibogaine? Maybe you guys can cover that. I think that's important.
Yeah, I think Doc can speak to that piece. Yeah.
You know, there's a distinction.
So right. So we find Ibogaine to be particularly effective for mild traumatic brain injury and addiction. If somebody doesn't have that, I usually dissuade them from doing Ibogaine. They can get a lot of the same benefits from mushrooms or from 5-MeO or from ayahuasca. There's less risk to these experiences that are not Ibogaine. There's also less cost to them. So generally, it's better to start off with.
What are the risks to Ibogaine?
So Ibogaine has cardiovascular effects. It can lower a person's heart rate. It can also interact with specific medications and with supplements and cause arrhythmias. So it's very important to be off psych meds, be off antibiotics, be off a number of different drugs before taking it. And then just be in general good health, like liver health, heart health, not be.
I can drop my heartbeat down now easy with all the breathing and everything. Because it's, I'm sorry, man, I was starting to be like a giggle moment. Because it's, I mean, isn't that crazy? The minute I'm like, oh, it's awesome. He's like, how awesome was I? You know what I mean? Because I'm pure. Oh, wow.
Just ask me.
That's right.
That's that fear, the respect fear.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
So how do you prevent a scare from that? That's through the medical workup that you do beforehand, is making sure that they don't have any issues with their heart and that kind of stuff.
Correct. Yeah. So there's a medical screening and tapering the drug safely. Sometimes we tell people they need to be off of their psych meds and they just abruptly stop them, and that's dangerous too. So it has to be done slowly, you know, with a professional.
Yeah.
And then there is the workup that they do. So the lab work, the EKG, and then the monitoring during the experience. So there's always three medical professionals there,
mm-hmm.
To handle emergencies if they come up. But we haven't had any issues with veterans.
Well, is that the people, I understand what you're thinking. We all thought that. I mean, mm-hmm. It was like, hey, fly by night is in. I was like, no. Man, you feel like you get locked into something like a procedure.
That's right.
And there are people watching out for you at all times and this, mm-hmm. that, and the other. And it's a hand by hand, guide by guide. You know exactly what's going on. And if you follow that, you're good to go, right? You're not. And there's so much more, obviously, that goes into it than what we're talking about. This is just a brief overview. But
So what are some of the risks with some of the other medicines like 5-MeO or psilocybin?
So those are mainly psychological risks. So when not properly administered, like in the wrong context, without preparation, at the wrong dosage, they can create trauma. Even they can leave somebody worse. With 5-MeO, because the person's not really present, like it's almost like a state of, you know, out of body or near death, mm-hmm. that they can have aspirations. If they vomit, you can aspirate. And then in combination with psychotropics, so specific antidepressants plus psychedelics, can also be problematic.
Yeah.
Risk on the 5-MeO is a forward flip in the bed.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
It's an actual flip.
You need to understand, like, when you go in, something shows up.
That's right.
And if you put something in there that's not supposed to be there, it's like the landlord knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
What the hell are you doing in my house?
Yeah. That's right.
And to get that out of there can be interesting.
Okay.
So for people that this is the first time they're ever hearing about this, the Ibogaine, when they're doing this experience, you've explained that there's medical professionals on board, mm-hmm. and they're monitoring their heart and everything. How long are they in the experience or the journey, whatever you
eternity is what it feels like. But in reality.
Reality, so that there's different phases to the experience. So there's a visionary phase. Well, people have these, you know, visualizations or visual hallucinations, mm-hmm. that can last from 6 to 12 hours. And then there's a residual stimulation phase, which can be 20 hours. So it's a good 2 days that people take to completely come out of it.
And how long do you want them to have downtime after that?
Ideally they wouldn't rush back into their life or work. So an ideal program would be like 5 to 7 days. Not everybody can take that time off work.
So I've seen that... in the program, you typically do the Ibogaine and then follow it up 2 days later with the 5-MeO. Mm-hmm. Is there a strategy to that?
Yeah, there's different reasons. There's psychological benefits to sequencing those medicines. There's physiological benefits. So they have different properties, different neurotransmitter systems they work on. So Ibogaine is primarily for neurogenesis, new brain cell growth. Mm-hmm. And then the 5-MeO reduces inflammation. So by having those two effects, you're having a very pronounced improvement in the mild.
Best way I can say it is making a soup, like when the Ibogaine does that, and then hitting it with the fire.
Mm. That's right.
And all those ingredients, I mean, you can feel it.
Yeah. And from the psychological standpoint, like Ibogaine is a shadow work, like, you know, dealing with your stuff and things you've been avoiding. And then the 5-MeO is that it feels like more integrating and more of the spiritual experience.
What I've noticed with other people that have gone through the program, and this is my very simple way of explaining it, is that the Ibogaine removes the darkness, mm-hmm. and the 5-MeO backfills it with light.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Mm-hmm. And
man, it's funny when we talk about this out loud and people who know you, they're like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah, and I get that.
But if you that's think right.
about I get
it.
That. Nuts.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
Like, trust me.
But even, yeah, but if you know, you know. Someone that has never done it, like, think about whatever you're going through in your life. Like, just, there's some dark shit sometimes.
Right.
And just think of, like, that, it's shaking that out. And then the 5.
You've never experienced anything like it.
And then right. the 5-MeO,
people trying to tell you about it, man. Like,
it's filling you with God's love.
Yeah.
And with that, like, eternal, whatever you want to call it, source or the universe or whatever, to me, it's God.
It's a
and
direct link.
It is a direct link to the Holy Spirit, and that mm-hmm. you have His love and His light, like, shining through you. And I've always been taught, like, be that beaming light to everybody.
It's almost like, I feel most people walk around with faith, they know that. They can feel it. Mm. But if you want to check in,
Yeah.
Do you want to check in and just like bother the boss and be like, hey, I'm just wondering
what's
going on.
Show up in his office.
You still there?
Dude.
Nope, I'm here.
Oh, man.
Yeah. For me, I mean, the Ibogaine, it felt like I was, so prior to the Ibogaine, it's like you're running on the same computer software from the day you were born, right? You never defragged it. You never reset your computer. You never, you know, did any updates. And the Ibogaine for me cleared all that out. And then I went into the five, and it's just like it plugs you in to source, to love, to God, whatever you want to call it. And it gives you every single upload you could ever need for eternity.
Check it. That's a great way to say that. Yeah. Or your whole life, you've been putting the computer together.
That's right.
And then you fire that sucker up.
Yeah, maybe that's
and whatever's not supposed to be in there goes flying out. That's right. Kind of dealing. It defrags itself as it puts it back together, and you're just kind of sitting there. You're laying there letting it do its thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel it moving. You feel it working.
Wow, man.
It's an interesting
experience. John, and Kara, like, y'all have never done it. Do we sound crazy, or do you understand what we're saying?
It's okay to say yes.
I think I follow 100%. It's still scary. Like, because you mentioned to me one day, like, would you think about doing it? And I was like, I don't know that I'm prepared to,
like. Well, in the little backstory, the only reason I said that is because I've known Andrew since he was a child. And it's not like I'm just saying it to, like, a random, you know, like, oh, you should do this.
Yeah. So ask questions then.
But I know that he could use some healing.
Yeah, I kind of had a crazy, you know, stereotypical crazy, you know, childhood. But I just feel like there's a lot of dark stuff that's, like, lingering there that I don't know, even know that I'm ready to, like, face, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's like bringing somebody in who can face it for you, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, but I'm not, like, saying you have to do it. I'm just saying, do you understand what we're saying?
To some level. I think there's still, only because I had a, you know, a young, bad edible experience in my life. That
he took a CBD gummy.
Which I know it's probably not a good comparison. It was not a CBD. It was an actual. No, it was actual edible.
There's nothing like.
It was like a real edible. And it just was a trip. Like, I actually had a. It wasn't like, cause I've, you know, smoked before. Like, you know, and that was a very different experience than this edible experience that I had.
You were also.
No, I get it. The only bad trips I've had are in edibles.
He was at a football game.
Oh, wow.
And he had been drinking.
I've been drinking. It was a bad. It was a series of bad things. Right?
Yeah.
It was like, we went and had margaritas, then I had this
edible. Oh,
come on now.
And I remember seriously having this out-of-body experience where, like, I always joke about it and everyone laughs, but, like, I felt like I could zoom in and out of the field.
Yeah.
And I was just having these different experiences.
So
you're writing the book on how not to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the perfect way of me explaining. You did a drug.
Yes.
This program is doing a medicine.
Which was why that was scary. There was no one there with me.
Correct.
Right.
To help me navigate that.
Yeah, or just, yeah, help you breathe through it. Or,
right.
Yeah.
It was just me trying to figure out how to walk. I was with Ethan that used to work here. And I remember standing up to do the national anthem, and I was wearing a hoodie. It was cold.
Sing it.
Yeah. He was holding me by the back of the hoodie to keep me from falling forward because I just didn't think I could even stand. It was,
wow.
Don't do that. Right?
Yeah.
Like, but you still stood up. I appreciate that.
But you did a drug.
But it was a drug, that
100%. And that is what my biggest issue with when people think about
this medicine is
they think, like, oh, yeah, I took shrooms in college. Like,
it's no, like you said, it's like brain surgery.
That's not the same thing at all.
Yeah. No.
This is a medicine with intention, with prep work, with post-integration. There is a complete difference between that and taking some weird edible at the Texans game.
Yeah, and that's also...
Stuff, does it scare you from it, or does it sound informative?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Good.
I think in, right. Yeah, like, I think there needs to be there needs to be a certain level of respect or fear, you know, quote unquote, of what it has the power and capability of doing. But it's super informative. It's enlightening in a way that makes you go, okay, like, if it has got this much cause and effect for the mm-hmm. people that are experiencing it, then why would you not want to at least do further research and support it?
Well, man, you don't even know what power is.
Yeah,
how to change your mind with Michael mm-hmm. Pollan, the best analogy I've heard is, imagine if we took a caveman, put him in a time machine and put him in Times Square for an hour mm. and then took him back to his cave. Mm. He'd be like, he knows something incredibly profound happened, but he can't even, I can't even write it on the cave wall or explain yeah. it to my yeah. cavemates. That's how yeah. I feel about it. Mm-hmm. Like you and I the other night, we were talking, Marcus, I'm like, I can't even explain with these things what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I fail in trying.
It's beyond words.
It's beyond words. Ineffable. It's yeah. exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
So for your project with the Gold Star family, the Gold Star wives, you're wanting 15?
We need 40 people.
Oh, 40. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah. you need 40 Gold Star. Is it just wives? Are you looking for parents? Or
just wives for this study.
Okay. So mm-hmm. Gold Star wives, and the program is going through who?
So they could contact us through our website, and then we would direct them to UT if they qualify.
And that is through Heroic Hearts?
So Heroic Hearts is a funding arm of the organization, so we're partnered with Heroic Hearts, and they're working directly with UT
okay.
to get this study
so
underway.
So it's Mission mm-hmm. Within and Heroic Hearts mm-hmm. going through the University of Texas Dell Medical Center.
Correct.
So if you're listening and you are a Gold Star wife, and you want to be part of this program, you just go to heroichearts.com.
Missionwithin.org.
Oh, missionwithin.org. Mm-hmm. So you go through yeah. you, and then mm-hmm. they'll help with the funding.
Correct. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And in addition to the Gold Star, though, it's also open to women who have lost a service member even after, mm-hmm. right, to mental health. So if there was a suicide after service, mm-hmm. that's in addition to the Gold Star. So both of those populations would be eligible for this.
Okay.
Yep.
And with the University of Texas Dell Medical Center that's doing the psychedelic research, how can people learn about them or support their efforts?
Mm-hmm. So they have their own website. I don't have the URL, but we can probably put into the show notes later.
Into mm-hmm. it. Okay. And then other programs that are helping just this movement of healing.
Yeah.
Can we talk about some of those?
Absolutely. I would credit Vets and Emory and Marcus Capone mm-hmm. for really kind of accelerating this movement, mm-hmm. which is now leading to legislative change.
How about those two?
Man. Mm-hmm.
They're a power team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's the Hope Project, which is geared towards helping women, so female veterans, spouses. The Heroic Hearts Project, their initial focus was just ayahuasca, but now they're also involved with Ibogaine, 5-MeO. Those are the ones that come to mind. Well, Seal Future Foundation, mm-hmm. very helpful in helping fund these treatments, and also they've supported UT and their research efforts.
Oh,
so
nice.
they've donated money towards this. So.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you know someone out there that could benefit from any of this, I mean, share this episode, obviously, because there's someone out there who, after listening to this episode, mm-hmm. knows someone in their life or in their mm-hmm. circle that could probably benefit from this treatment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But these are all veteran-based programs. What if someone just has a sister that mm-hmm. is suicidal or that yeah. is dealing with addiction or, I don't know, like, just they feel like they can use the medicine. Where do mm-hmm. they go?
Well, that's I think one of the toughest parts right now is figuring out like which providers are legitimate, where to go, mm-hmm. how to pay for this, how to afford this.
Right?
Yeah. So right now the majority of the treatments are happening outside of the country because that's where they're legal. A lot of work is being done in Jamaica because the government has embraced this as a treatment modality. So there's a bunch of retreats there.
Well, remember, we're the youngest over here. It's almost like we mm-hmm. were every country till we got here. It's just catching. Well, that stuff's just catching up, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's
like that brings us back to like the people that are just, you meet someone and they're like, oh, my brother's an addict and we've tried mm-hmm. everything. We've tried every, treatment facility or whatever. There's really no hope for them right now with this, or they just need to find their own program out of
the States. So we are treating civilians as well. So we can point people in the right direction, or if they're a good candidate for our program, we could potentially treat them.
Okay.
But it's just hard to kind of endorse or recommend any specific program.
Oh, sure, because what it is.
Yeah, I would have had to go through what they're doing. So right. there's some in Costa Rica that I do know that are doing great work. Soltara for ayahuasca is one of them.
Okay.
But that's about
and
it.
And does the ayahuasca help with addiction?
Yeah.
And what about suicide, like suicidal thoughts?
Yeah, well, if somebody's suicidal, I think ketamine would be the best option because it's already legally available in the United States. Okay. And there's ketamine clinics everywhere. So you would just Google ketamine clinic near me and that one.
So I've also seen ketamine abused.
Yeah.
So with ketamine, if someone is looking to help their family member, do you recommend finding a clinic that has a pre and post integration?
100%. Yeah. I mean, it is critical for all psychedelics to have that rigor in the preparation, the integration, and then the sacred or the safe holding of the experience. And then when it's used in a clinical setting, it's not as addictive as taking a take-home dose, for example.
I highly recommend no one doing a take-home dose.
Yeah.
I've seen people do that, and it's batshit crazy.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, I am very anti-drugs. So I feel like that is a drug if you're just doing it, like taking it home and sniffing it just whenever you feel like getting high. So, but in a clinic, if you're having the ketamine and you're doing it for the right intention and you do the prep work, you talk to a coach beforehand and you really set that intention and then change your life afterwards. You have to make certain changes, whether that's maybe distancing some friends or whatever it is, whatever is triggering you to be in the position to have the reason you went and did the ketamine, you have to remove those negative things from your life. Do you have any ketamine clinics that you recommend?
It depends on the state.
Okay.
So I do have some trusted providers in Virginia. There's some here in Texas. There's some in California that I know.
So are you okay with people going to Mission Within's website and just saying like, hey, can you point me in the right direction?
Yeah, I mean, they could contact us. Like, I can only talk about my experience with a few providers, but if they're in a state that we don't have any experience, we wouldn't really know.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like with anything we said, we came in first. Once it gets going, it'll get going.
Yeah.
I really hope that the legislators really look at this and look at it as a medicine. Obviously, we have to keep the druggies at bay and not...
Well, it's just with anything,
But really, if you look at it from a medicinal standpoint and realize that it is changing people's lives, it's saving lives. People that are suicidal that that did it and they realize, like, life is worth living and I have a purpose. It might not be the same purpose as the next guy, but everybody has their own purpose. And that might be their children. It might be their wife or their mom or whatever, but there's no reason to take your own life because of pain. When pain is relative, your brain can wash that pain away.
One of the coolest things I've heard from a couple of the Gold Star wives, but coolest isn't the right word, I apologize for that, but some of the Gold Star wives have said, if my husband had done this, he would be here. Type of thing. So that you want to talk about an endorsement of this after they do it, they're like, I know if he had done this, he'd be here.
Yeah.
So that death was not in vain.
Right.
It is going to serve a purpose.
But that's why
that brought tears to my eyes when I heard some of those testimonials. I'm like, oh my God, man, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's volumes of testimony, right? There's volumes. I mean, we could speak all day about individual stories and impact.
Oh, we got people going through just the person themselves.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, if
you're looking at two testimonials,
that's right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, if
they tell you they went through it, no matter. There's some guys we're like, hey man, I don't care what he says. I'm like ride or die with that guy. Like,
that's it.
Follow him into wherever.
That's it. But that's why the research aspect of what we're trying to do is so, so important and so critical, because we understand Western medicine needs, you know, the quantitative side of things. They need the data to support the efficacy.
So when you're doing this, you're collecting all the data and you're giving it to UT. Is that right?
Well, they would get the brain scans at UT, so UT would be collecting the data. We're just doing the treatments.
But we'll probably start to collect some more qualitative stuff. right? Some experiential stuff from people at different points in mm-hmm. time as well,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we want to be able to really mesh it all together to give a full sure. picture oh, yeah. of the impact.
The whole program.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So what is your story with Mission Within?
Sure. So I served in the Marine Corps, did a couple tours, and then coming back, you know, the unfortunate veteran narrative, right? I had the struggles with the TBIs, with the depression, anxiety, all of it, right? And I coped with it by staying very, very busy and active, right? I got back, went right back to school, got into my career, started a family. But when that started to slow down, I started to unravel, and I unraveled quickly. You know, turned to alcohol. I was angry. I was confused and lost. And actually ended up going to the Marcus Institute for Brain Health. That was kind of my first step, where I met this amazing therapist who, you know, while I was getting the treatment for all of the cognitive stuff that I had going on and the PTSD and depression, you know, just opened my eyes to the woo-woo side of things that I was like, I don't believe in any of what you're talking about. But the more and more I heard it, something inside me was like, this is true. Like when you just hear something, you may have never heard it before, but you hear it and it resonates and you're like, okay, I need to listen. Like this is a point where I need to shut off all my biases and just listen to what she's saying. And that relationship continued, right? Even after I got, you know, out of the Marcus Institute, and she left, and she actually serves as a therapist for Mission Within. And she just gave me a call and she's like, Ryan, you know, I'm working with Martine. They're doing some great work for veterans. I think it's right up your alley. Would you be willing? And I was like, shit, here it is. I was like, okay, it presented itself. And I went down, and I mean, to say it was life-changing is a gross understatement, right? I mean, I came out not just repaired, but better than I ever was. Like, I don't recall a time in my adult life, even pre-service, where I felt this good and this in tune with everybody and everything around me. It was a whole new world to operate out of. And I knew I had a, when I was in the medicine space, like it just kept coming to me. Like, I need to give back to veterans. That's what's important to me. Your ego has kind of gotten you in a career trajectory. That's great for your finances and your ego, but you've got to get rid of that. That's gotta be put to the side. And I listened to it. I took it to heart and I came out with a plan. You know, obviously I had to talk with my family because it's going to cause some changes. But I said, I need to get back, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to find a way. And as it does, it presents itself, right? And, you know, connected with Martine and told my story, and here I am. And, you know, I'm just doing the best to just change that narrative mm-hmm. and get as many people to help as possible.
And what's your role with the organization?
So it, basically operational support. So my career was in healthcare. I work in academic healthcare as an executive, so I oversaw a bunch of research. And a whole bunch of aspects, finance, human resources, kind of the whole gambit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just basically want to take that skill set, and rather than feed my ego with a bigger office and a bigger paycheck, I want to give back.
Yeah.
You know, so I came to Martina, said, I'll do whatever you need me to do. Whatever you need me to clean the bathrooms, I'll clean the bathrooms. Yeah. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I just want to get as many people to this healing as possible. Cause I mean, it completely changed my life. The relationship with my wife and my children is indescribable.
Fun.
It's amazing.
Like, you know what fun we had?
It's
like,
joy.
It just brings out like that, that joy in there. Like, ultimately, I think everything we did was work.
Yeah.
Not the medicine. Yeah. The medicine's not fun.
No, that is
listeners.
Not fun.
Yeah.
It's
not
perfectly clear. I've been very upfront about it. I made that perfectly clear, I thought.
Yeah. Say it again.
That's right.
I don't need to repeat myself.
I'm just
letting
everyone know the medicine is not fun. Yeah. It's life afterwards is fun because you have let go of all of the tension and expectations, and there's so many things that we kind of cling on to, comparing ourselves to others and whatnot, and it's like, just be you. I think what God told Marcus is just be.
Yeah.
Like, it's really just going inside yourself and understanding that you don't have to live mm-hmm. up to these different expectations and these different, you know, what society wants us to be. We have each other. We have our faith. We have our friends and family. We serve our purpose.
Mm-hmm.
that's really in our kids, and that's it. That's all that matters. Let you know what you're
supposed to focus on.
That's it.
Like, yeah. when that jaw hits, and you're like, oh.
If you can tune in and be open to it, you're going to come away with a purpose. I have absolutely no doubt.
Yeah.
And that's what most people are missing, I think. Yeah. They're just kind of existing and whatever catches their attention. So that's why the stresses are always different. And that's why a lot of people get crushed, because they're not supposed to be handling certain types of stress. It's like a reset.
Yeah.
Like playing the game with the controllers were backwards.
Yeah.
And then it flips that sucker back around, and you're like, ah.
Got it.
Well, it's like you come out of it with a whole new set of, obviously a new perspective, but a new set of rules and kind of an ethos to live by.
Yeah.
But then you're back in a world that doesn't support that.
Right.
So that's why the community is so training important. And stuff, right? Yeah, and the training and keeping up on things. And, you know, I mean, integration isn't a 6-week process. It's a lifetime.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's constantly coming up every day and going to bat and doing the work.
Because you get better.
That's it. You get better and better.
You're actually in an environment where you're training and new stuff shows up, and then you got new scenarios, scenario-based.
Yeah.
It's just like being in the military.
I think Ryan brings up a good point, because you guys did a great job of briefing us, like the 30, 60, 90. Because the first 30, that pink cloud phase, I'm sitting at a stoplight crying because the stoplight's beautiful. But then that next 30 days, I was kind of on a low, because I'm like, why is everybody not like this? Why are the homeless people? Why is there war? I had a little bit of a low in my integration. Like, what's going on, people? Why isn't everybody great? Mm-hmm. And then the last 90 or 60 to 90, I found my cruise point. But there was some ups and downs in the integration. And then this guy creepily calling, right on time. And then I'm like, I needed that phone call.
Yeah.
So having that support and knowing that the integration isn't just sunshine and lollipops is critical.
It's work.
It's work.
Well, and I think that's why it's important that, like, if a veteran's going to go through your program, it is important that the wife considers doing it too, because I remember, Marcus, a lot of husbands I would hear from friends, like, they would come home and it would just be cloud nine. Like, everything, they were so happy and, like, showing love and affection or whatever. And I had heard this before, and then Marcus comes home, and he was an asshole. I mean,
No offense.
He was so.
Y'all out where they sent me.
It was way worse than what I had dealt with before, and I just
That's awesome.
I was scared to death, honestly, because I'm like, wait, my husband didn't come home, like what you're saying. He's not bubbly and hugging me. And so I was terrified, and thankfully to the program, I had a coach that I could call and say, like, hey, Marcus is not happy. He is not in a good mood. I don't know if he even likes me anymore. Like, I'm terrified. What did you do to him? You know, I was scared, and I was told, like, just don't. He's going through his thing. It's not anything you're doing. Just continue to love him and show him love. And don't stop what you would normally do. Don't act scared. Because I was scared. I'm like, wait, is this going to, like, is this the end? And the coach told me, like, this has nothing to do with you. There's no cause and effect from this. Just be you. And I
can't believe it showed back up.
And after doing that for 2 weeks, he just snapped out of it. And ever since then, we've been stronger than ever. And that was the best advice that she could give me, was just to keep loving him, because it wasn't me. I'm not the one that was making him like that. Another thing that happened in that time period, that 2-week time period, Marcus said to me, he's like, we're just not on the same page. I'm on a different, I see the world differently now. And I really thought about that. And he goes, you wouldn't do the medicine. And I'm like, yeah.
I don't sound like that. I would, I would never talk to you like that. I know, right? I'm like, wait a second.
You weren't yelling
stick up for
me.
Myself
just,
here. I don't talk to you like that ever.
That was in a 2-week time period that I'm
well,
saying.
Then that
it was
wasn't
a little
me.
Transition. But
some of hell was left.
You know, I think there's a few people listen to this, all right?
But I had to really sit back and think about it. Like, you're right. I wouldn't do that medicine because I don't need it. And I realized that was my ego, like, saying that. And then I had to think, I had to sit back and, like, okay.
Oh, it almost got me because I was like, you made me go down there.
Yeah, he did. Like,
you put me in that.
He told me that. He said, you wanted to change
me. You can't believe what happened
you
to me.
You wanted, and so.
Dude, I was like, whoa.
That's what scared me is he was right. I didn't want to change who he was. I wanted him to go back to who I knew. Mm. And I wasn't trying to change him into like a different person. I love him. I love who he is at his core. That's what I was trying to get him back to by encouraging him to do this.
I didn't realize how far I'd gotten away from myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And yeah. So that's when I considered doing the medicine. And mm-hmm. the reason I air that dirty 2-week laundry is that if I wouldn't have done the medicine, I don't think we would be on the same page.
This is mm-hmm. good stuff to be bringing yeah, up because I went through the same thing. This is perfect.
Yeah. Because after doing it, I'm like, oh, yeah, like I immediately, and I let go of a lot of fear, like anticipated fear, you know, like, okay, I can't do this or I'm going to trigger this or, you know, whatever. I let go of all of that eggshell walking kind of attitude that had built up over years. And the reason I needed to let go is because he had changed. Mm-hmm. He wasn't drinking anymore. So I need to let go of any fear that I had that brought that. But before I did the medicine, it's natural to have that, but the medicine helps you get rid of that. Mm-hmm. So
we had, same thing, man. 2 weeks was a month for Susie and I, because I came back, we come back, lean, mean, fighting machine, clean piece of paper. I'm great. She's like, well, yay for you.
Yeah.
I'm still mm-hmm. kind of, you know, old you still kind of floating in my mind. Mm-hmm. So it is, it's a good brief that they do to prepare the spouses or the significant others for the changes when they come home. So, because there was some tension, there was some dogfighting
yeah.
going on.
Yeah.
And thank you, Susie stepped into the medicine too with Doc, and now we're flying formation. It's great, mm-hmm. but it's not all sunshine and lollipops. I'm so glad you brought that
yeah.
up.
Yeah. And so I do. I'm not like saying people need to do it, but just consider it. If your husband is going through, consider doing it yourself too, because it is.
Oh, if y'all are a team.
Yeah, you're a team.
Like if you have a real team. Like
or even the wives could go first, potentially.
Yeah, or the wives could go first. And mm-hmm. And that way you are on the same page, because it does, it's like a clean slate. It just erases everything that happened before. You're that not going to hold on to grudges.
Mm-hmm. Wife going first, make it, because she'll be like, you know, as opposed to us, we're like, you know what you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. It's like,
which I'm, yeah. So I'm grateful that y'all are doing all this. I'm grateful that y'all are changing lives. And it is a ripple effect.
One of the questions we get asked all the time, email, social media, is what people can do for the veteran community. And obviously, I think for general population, you know, the regular guy, while there's still not a lot of treatment options for them, they could still be supporting y'all's mission. Mm-hmm. Because I think that that's only going to go to further the efforts to hopefully one day legalize it here in the country. So how can the regular guys support what you guys are doing?
Great question. So, our partner in the nonprofit world is Heroic Hearts Project. They're a 501c3, so they can accept tax-deductible donations. So I would be grateful if people, you know, support yeah. veterans in that way.
Because especially this research, it's expensive. It's expensive to do. Mm-hmm. Obviously treating the veterans and getting the homes healed, that's what we are. But we understand that to get this to the most amount of people possible and to change that narrative, research is required. So, you know, if people can contribute that way. But really, you know, just if you see someone struggling, you know, reach out, be that person. Don't make it uncomfortable, and just, you know, let them know if you hear this, like there are options out there. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to say we're the option every single time, right? Because if it's right for you, we'll get you there. If it's not, we'll also let you know.
And they have to be willing.
100%.
They have to be willing to do the work, because it is work. You don't just go down there, that's do right. it and come home. Like mm-hmm. we talked about it a bunch, but there is a lot of work. And you had said, like, it's not just a 6-week program coming home, it's a lifetime. And I think that's another reason it's important that your spouse does it, is because you can hold each other accountable. Mm-hmm. And you can say, hey, you know, you haven't been doing your meditation lately. Let's, like, Marcus is really good about telling me, let's go on our walks, let's mm-hmm. do that. Like, he is really good about being disciplined that way. Yeah. Like, just when you do it as a team, you have an accountability partner. Mm-hmm. So Thank y'all.
I like to throw it in there. It's a little subtle. Like, I've been doing my breathing. You've been doing yours? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
America, we're great at when it comes to stuff like this, because instead of just putting it into the government and making us all do it, yeah, like, get out there and road test it.
That's right.
And if we do it this way, it's better. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey man, proof in there. They like, we like watching each other go through stuff. And like, hey man, he took an ass whipping like you can't believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did that to make us better.
Yeah.
There's some respect that comes with that. I don't know how we got that got bred into us, but it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's one guiding light of this of our crew in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Because we treat each other, it's pretty amazing. And this is that's how you know this is in the right step, and it pushes in because it's a one by one deal.
Mm-hmm.
Fix one. Fix that one second. Turn around and fix the other one.
That's it.
Because everyone's different, yeah.
It's like an oxygen mask on an airliner, right? What do they tell you? You got to put your mask on first before you can help somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I can...
You actually pay attention when you're in there, dude. That's pretty good.
So missionwithin.org.
.org
mm-hmm. is how everybody finds you. Mm-hmm. And then the documentary No Fallen Heroes is coming out that it kind of shows people what Dr. Martine does, and yeah.
Man, it's really like good people. Like, y'all are good. You ever run across a good person?
Love it.
Like, we kind of stay away from those in our community because we're completely different, right? Yeah. But when you see one, like when especially when there's a few walking, like an absolute just good person there with the best intentions, even if you yell, like, hey, it's going to be fine. You know, it's not just the happy person. I'm not talking about that fool. I'm talking about the good person, right? Mm-hmm. Tells you what's what. It's really something when you run into them. They're rarity down here, like unicorns.
Thank y'all for what y'all do. And, I mean, you're literally changing generations. You're not just changing people, so.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to plug or talk about?
Not really.
No. It's beautiful.
Okay.
This was great.
Thank you.